Blog Talk Radio.
Once again, gracing your earwaves with what we think is one of the best shows on Blog Talk Radio.
I know the best, not one of the.
You think it's the best?
Yeah, I'm on it.
Well, yeah, there's that. I keep forgetting, the X Factor is the great and wonderful. Come on. I've
yes,
got to get
indeed.
An applause track for you when I introduce you from now on.
While I wave at my adoring public.
Are you doing the royal wave? You must do the royal wave.
I don't know if I'm doing the royal wave or the beauty pageant wave, but I'm doing it.
Well, you know, there's the windshield washer, the windshield wiper, the royal wave, and I forgot what the other ones are called.
Now I'm doing the royal wave, where it's just the hand and the wrist.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So,
first let me apologize for the background noise. I'm in the car, of course. Stuff happens.
Are you in the back of the car, police car? Is that where we are again this time?
Well, not yet. I'm working on it, though.
I would encourage you to not get locked up on the air. That's going to be hard to beat.
Yeah, I'm going to try not to get a ticket on the air. Well, actually, you know what? If I get a ticket, I would prefer to be on the air because, you know, Seattle Police Department's off the chain. So I'm going to need some witnesses and evidence.
I do believe I remember seeing the Seattle Police Department knock a teenager the heck out a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and you know what? I've always been on the fence about that particular incident. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, she's somebody's child, you know. I get that. But also, you know, the officer was trying to deal with, you know, with the other girl. And this little idiot is rolling up on him. He don't know what she got. And I maintain that given the reputation of Seattle PD, she's glad she got socked in the face instead of tased and shot. She needs to be happy about that. And they get her tase shot and then get her neck stepped on, all of which has happened on the watch of the SPD.
Well, it sounds like you have a highly effective police department there, whereas here in Baltimore, all we have is officers who run up on curves, hit people, run into each other, flip their cars, and run their cars into buildings.
Yes, but while they're doing all that, hitting the person notwithstanding, they aren't practicing police brutality on the citizens of Baltimore, unlike SPD.
Well, that's not true, because today it came out that a man who was in custody in East Baltimore, who died in custody, the death has been ruled a homicide. So No, he wasn't stomped on the street, but they killed him. They killed him really dead.
Well, I mean, at least there was an outcome other than he was handcuffed in the back of the police car and shot himself.
I've seen that happen, or seen results of that happening, but I haven't really figured out how to do it.
It's a mystery. Oh, and shoot yourself in the head while you're handcuffed on the opposite side of your strong hand.
Right, right.
Not sure how that works out.
With your hands cuffed behind you.
Right, handcuffed behind you. Shoot yourself in the opposite side of the head, of which is your strong arm, and it's suicide.
Right, and
so you're left-handed. You're handcuffed with your hands behind your back. You use your left hand to shoot yourself in the right side of the head.
Right. All makes sense to me. I can see that happen.
The mystery.
What
was that? Where was that? Tennessee? Texas?
You know what? We'll have to research because I'm not sure.
I don't remember anymore.
That's how jaded we are in this country. People get killed in back police cars while handcuffed, and we quickly forget because we get caught up in the next news item that moves us along.
Well, I didn't forget the story. I just forgot where it happened. But
so,
I take your point. The fact that it could have happened in Tennessee or Texas or Ohio or Florida is a sad testament.
It is. It is. It's a sad sad testimony on the strength of handcuffs made in this country.
So, wait, speaking of Florida, can I take a personal moment? I just want to give a shout-out to my cousin, T.L. T.L., she's a private person, so I'm not going to just blast her name all across America.
Wait a minute, is she a rapper?
Yeah, little T.L. out of Florida, T.L.L. Little T.L., I just want to give a shout-out to her. She's dealing with a health issue, and I want her to know that she's on my mind, and you got this, girl.
Well, let me just say, my heart and prayers goes out to little TL as well, but I find it kind of odd that after talking about police, you want to talk about your cousin. Now, I don't know what her health issue is, but if she's
no, it was Florida more than Popo.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm sure she'll appreciate that.
Now, you know the Larsouls, we handle our own, but we ain't handling it like that. You know, we do things where you can eat the evidence, just saying. You know, there's no police contact around here.
Right.
I have never been arrested. Never. I've been on top of a police car handcuffed, but I have never been arrested.
Now, you put it in the rule that we're not going to talk about your junk or your sex life. And why are you going to throw that out there like that?
That's your mind taking it there. And I will submit that I was proven innocent 5 minutes after the handcuffs were put on me and they were therefore taken off.
And what were you more upset about, the handcuffs coming off or you being found innocent?
What do you think? I wasn't as upset when I got shot in the behind with a rubber bullet, but I was upset.
I'm going to move that along.
Police shot me with a rubber bullet.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I, to this day, I swear they were aiming because it was square on my left cheek. Pow! Yeah, it's funny now. Shit was
funny
when it happened.
That just reminds me of a skit that Chris Rock did on his show about sexual harassment. And the lady who he had a video interview on was complaining about how every day on her job she gets groped, her butt is grabbed, they make lewd comments, make her sit on their lap, and how she's just fed up with it on her job. And Chris Rock was incensed and wanted to demand action, asked her where she worked, and she named a local strip club.
How about you get a new job? I know times is hard.
Sometimes you got to do what you got to do. So this in no way, shape, or form is a reflection of your cousin, Little T.L., down in Florida, the rapper.
And you know what? I'm starting to think she is a rapper because we play song pop, and she kicks my behind in the rap category every single time. I guess because them's her peeps.
Well, seeing as I know Lil T.L., I won't bring up that you probably kill her movie trivia.
That's true.
That might reveal much.
Okay, since you put it that way, okay, yeah, I'll take my lumps in song pop.
I think the last movie she saw was Song of the South.
Quit clowning. She saw Godfather. And maybe Jaws. Quit clowning.
No, I think she saw Jaws. I don't think she saw Godfather. Last I talked to her, I don't think she has ever seen Godfather.
Oh, that's right. I don't think she's seen Godfather. I know she hasn't seen Star Wars. Oh, she saw Ted there.
She did see Ted. She did.
Yes, that cinematic marvel, that classic film that's on the top 100 of the best movies of all time, I say sarcastically, but she saw it. So we'll give her props for that.
I think it's one of the top 10 comedy movies I've ever seen.
Doesn't make it the top 10 of all time.
No, but it's one of the top 10 comedy movies I've ever seen.
You know, not for me. I liked it, but... I am happy that Seth MacFarlane is going to be doing the Oscars. I wonder how that's going to go. I wonder if Ted's going to make an appearance.
Oh, you know Ted's going to make an appearance. You know Ted's going to make an appearance.
I want Stewie.
Well, it might be a battle between Stewie and Ted. It's a strong possibility.
One can only hope. Oh, you know what? I want to do another little bit of housekeeping. As you know, last week we had open mic, and
yes,
we got a lot of positive feedback about that.
Yes,
so,
we did.
We definitely want to have another open mic. Some of the feedback wanted to discuss their side of the story this week, but we have an agenda. So maybe next week, you know, make sure you guys come on back, and maybe next week we'll have open mic for the men folk.
Yeah. I think we need someone on Sassy's level for the men's side. And I'm looking for people right now to see who could possibly carry the same water that Sassy did. And as far as I know, Richard Pryor is dead. So we got to find someone on the same level. Maybe Paul Mooney.
Yes, I'm thinking that's a conversation we don't want to have on the show.
So, maybe it's just me. A lot of compliments on last week's show, a lot of comments on last week, a lot of feedback, a lot of positive feedback. And
it all said me and Sassy were right. So there. But we knew that.
Okay.
Well, that's the feedback I saw.
But that's the feedback that you wrote. So, I mean.
Well, I wasn't going to go there. I wrote it from one of my 5011 email accounts.
I knew it was you when it said it was postmarked from Egypt. So,
Yeah, that's not me.
Yeah.
That's your other crazy woman.
So let's get right to it. Tomorrow, America is the first debate between Mitt Flip Flop Romney and President Barack Obama. What are we to expect from this debate? A lot of people, myself included, have said that we think Barack Obama will destroy Mitt Romney in this debate. But upon further reflection, remembering the 2008 debates, I'm kind of worried that President Obama will be too bogged down with facts and information to keep up with the short attention span disorder that most of America seems to have, and they'll be glitzed by Mitt Romney's latest, latest position on all things going on in the world. What do you think? Kamal?
I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, we know that Mitt is working on his quote unquote zingers.
Yes. Which I thought was a pastry put out by Hostess.
Right. And given his quote unquote jokes from the past, I can't imagine that his zingers will be anything that I'm going to be talking about from a positive standpoint. I don't find him funny. I also fear that I might fall asleep because if PBO gets, they like to call him professorial, but they use it as a bad word. But, sometimes he can kind of drone a little bit on, and Mitt Romney puts me to sleep in general. I hope that there's some zingers from Barack Obama. I hope that he nails him on. He's got to find a way to hit him on Bain Capital and outsourcing jobs. He's got to find a way to hit him over and over again about the 47%.
Well, the theme of tomorrow's debate will be domestic issues. So it would squarely, in my opinion, seem as though it would fall into Barack Obama's favor, with the economy getting better, though not where it should be or where he wants it to be. But I think when you frame it under domestic issues, you have to bring in Mitt Romney's experience with Bain Capital and as governor of Massachusetts.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And you have to hit him on his insistence that if he becomes president, he's going to create 12 million jobs.
Yes.
How? You have to hit him on the Ryan budget. They keep saying, that there's going to be, even Chris Wallace, Fox even hit Ryan on this. You want to save $5 trillion off the deficit. So, how are you going to do that with tax breaks and then no clear plan on loopholes that you're going to close and deductions you're going to take away? They keep saying what's the term they're using? Not zero, zero revenue? No. I forget the term that they're using. But, basically, how can you possibly do that? There's no way that you can cut the taxes without cutting some spending, and they're refusing to give us any clear objectives on what they're going to cut, other than, we're just going to cut Medicare, and we're going to cut PBS funding, and we're going to, all the stuff that they've said they're going to cut is not $5 trillion worth of cuts.
Well, not only that, but they're going to do cuts, give tax breaks, and try to continue, even though this falls outside of the domestic policy, try to continue the war in Afghanistan. And then say, just believe us, this will work. Because even though it failed under George Bush and failed under Ronald Reagan, we think we have the right formula for it to work this time.
And not only that, I believe in my heart of hearts they're going to try and start some mess in the Middle East.
Well, I mean,
whether on purpose or an accident, accident because they don't know how to handle foreign policy, they're just itching. They've got this cowboy mentality, these Republicans, of the last 30-some-odd years, where they have to go in guns blazing. And I know Mitt Romney is just itching to do something about Iran.
Well, he is saying that. But I think when the rubber hits the road, Romney has no clue what to do about Israel, Iran, that whole issue.
Since he has no clue, that's part of my fear. Because
exactly.
I think he's going to pop off at the mouth and say stuff that he shouldn't be saying, causing some tension and turmoil to the point where we may have to do something, and then he's ill-equipped to do what we may have to do.
Yeah, well, see, let's look at this from a realistic standpoint, which is something we in America aren't seeming to do right now. You have a country that is weary from two wars, one of which has become the longest-lasting war in the history of this country. 12 years now we've been in Afghanistan. And for whatever the various reasons for that are, through negligence of actually going after the people who were responsible for attacking this country on 9/11, 2001, or an eagerness to fight a war with Iraq because, one, we beat them up before, so we should be able to beat them up again. But the fact remains, you have a country that lost thousands of young men and women to that war and have brought those soldiers home to a bad economy and are trying to get their lives back in order. And now you're talking about starting another war with another country that's more well-equipped and more prepared to fight for a reason that is not exactly in America's best interest. It's a war of choice, not a war of necessity, and it's posturing that could lead to a large-scale conflict that I don't think American people are really interested in fighting.
And you know what? I think that's part of the problem. I mean, when I compare what's been going on the last 12 years to other wars, this doesn't seem like a war to me. And this is not to diminish, you know, what our armed forces are doing. I think that, you know, the men and women in uniform are above reproach, and I'm not meaning any disrespect towards them. But when I think of history and I think of wars, I think of something that the entire country is behind. And, you know, it's clearly a war. I mean, but this has always seemed to me, with the exception of the first couple months, an excursion, a fight. You know, I've never seen this, you know, like World War One, World War Two. I'm not real versed on the War of 1812, so I might be wrong on that. But it's always felt like, you know, just a fight to me. And I've never felt that this country was 100% behind the issue. I know the country wasn't 100% behind Vietnam, but it seemed to me that there was more unity rather than less than what we have right now.
Well, the American public has not been vested in this war as we were during Vietnam, as we were during Korea, as the country was during World War One and Two. They're not as vested because there's no sacrifices being made at home to further the war effort abroad.
Exactly, exactly. It's like we're not behind them. And good or bad, you know, historically, war has been profitable. Not so much this time. Nobody's asked me to buy T-bills. Nobody's asked me to ration my bacon and my beans. Nobody's told me to find scrap metal. I think George Bush said go out shopping.
Yes, he encouraged us all to shop, and that solved it. Right up to the part where he landed on the aircraft carrier and declared mission accomplished.
And he did that, what, 6 years ago, seven?
Yeah, about that, yeah.
Wow. Good job, George.
How fast time flies. And because he was the hero of that conflict or police action, as I was just reminded of in our chat room, the Republicans embraced him during their convention this year and had him front and center as the centerpiece of their national convention. Way to go, W. Way to go. So, Mitt Romney's...
Go ahead.
Mitt Romney's posturing on going to war with Iran to keep them from getting a nuclear weapon is so much balderdash, because I think if people pay attention to the way wars are being fought today in the media, or how they're being reported that they're being fought today in the media, there's probably no reason at all to put any American lives in danger to actually, if need be, to militaristically go after Iran's nuclear capabilities. Well, you got drones now that'll kill people from a very, very far distance without actually even having a pilot in the aircraft. I guess that's what the term drone
means.
Yeah.
I saw Bourne Legacy. I know that's possible.
Yeah, there's no need to have boots on the ground.
Nope.
But
you could be 1,000 miles away with a little joystick aiming that little thing.
Right. But as we talked about previously, all we really have to do is send Colin Powell and Jimmy Carter over to Iran with the PowerPoint presentation of this is what happened to Iraq in 91. This could be your brain.
In 2012
with a drone over your head. Don't play. Don't
right.
play. And Israel has systematically used covert actions to kill Iranian nuclear physicists in their homes. So, you know, we can draw a line in the sand, but I agree with the president and agree with right-thinking people that it's really time to start letting diplomacy work, and we've got the diplomacy behind us. We have evidence of what America's military capabilities are without sending hundreds of thousands of troops to another country to fight war. You need to rethink why you think you need a nuclear weapon, because you could wake up with your mailbox going through your head from a nuclear from a drone attack.
Or you could be sitting at the YMCA getting ready to get your head pounded on because you spit on Kamal's car. There's that option too.
Since you're in the car, you don't see what's going on in the chat room tonight. But let me just say that I've added one of your favorite people to our conversation, and I'd like America to once again welcome our favorite guest host. Hi, Sassy.
Hi.
Hi, Sassy.
How y'all doing?
Girl, I need you with a sock full of nickels to pound this man's head who just spit on my car. I know
what?
He saw me in here.
He spit on your car?
Yeah, just walking and just spit, hit my car.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, that's the most vile thing that you can do to a person. I mean, literally.
I know.
Spit on my car is reason for me to fight you. Spit on me is reason for me to stab you in the neck.
That's true. But see, the thing of it is, I'm here talking to you guys, and I'm at the YMCA, so I couldn't get out and say, what the F? Do you know I will stab a mofo? Couldn't go that route.
Oh, my God.
I just had
Who
to bite my
that?
Tongue. But you know what? It wasn't even it's not like he looked at me and said, ugh, you're nasty, and spit on my car. He's just walking, minding his own business, and decided he needed to spit, and it hit my car.
Wow.
You shouldn't be driving the car that looks like a brass spittoon, though. I'm just saying, you know, the cuspidor-colored car is probably the problem.
You know I drive a Magnum, and you know I drive it fast. How many speeding tickets I have, I'm not driving a spittoon. Does she drive Magnum?
Yeah, she drives Magnums, America.
See, you got to watch how you say things like that around him, because he's already twisted.
Necessary. Was that necessary? And see, I don't think like that. It never occurred to me that that would have been something he could have twisted.
You never know. With me, you never
know.
You need a
girlfriend. Sassy, you available?
Oh, no. No, but I told him he keep poking me on Facebook, I'm going to have to make him assume the position.
And I like the position.
He did. He said, I would not be upset. But he's crazy. He's absolutely crazy. But I came in late, but I was looking at your show profile. So y'all got a lot you want to talk about. And how do you feel about, you know, the blocking the vote in Pennsylvania?
Well, thank you for bringing us back on point, because once Kamal started talking about a car being spit on, I lost track. But, yeah, Pennsylvania has been shot down for blocking voters this year.
For now. They may try and bring it back up. They may try and bring it back up, you know, next year. Well, probably 2014 as opposed to next year, but, yeah.
So long as
they did it before this election, the judge said that he's blocking it for now. He will revisit after the election.
Right. So it can be possible for it to be put in effect in 2013. However, I would think in that time period, hopefully, the Justice Department, the NAACP, somebody would come in and file suit to say this is absurd. What happened to the VRA? What happened to Americans' rights to vote? How are you legally disenfranchising a segment of people to keep them from their right to vote?
Well, I think the NAACP is on it. I'm not sure if the ACLU is involved or not, but I would hope so. But, you know, the ACLU is funny sometimes. I think we need to relish in the temporary win, that at least through this election there's not going to be any shenanigans in Pennsylvania, and just double down and work really, really hard so they don't keep trying to do it.
Well, I would love to have been the fly on the wall. And again, for Sassy, since you came a little late, I played this clip. But I would love to have been a fly on the wall when this man got the news.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
Right, and then someone comes in his office and says, the judge said that, no, we can't do voter suppression this year.
Now, and speaking of voter suppression, how about voter fraud, which the Republicans have been looking high and low for, and come to find out, they are the perpetrators of it. Did you catch that story?
Yes, they are the perpetrators of voter fraud. They are.
This is just
one state. They've tried to enact laws in 30 of the states.
Yeah, 31 other states that have the law on record, their books, or are trying to enact the law on their books. I mean, enact the law in the state.
Right.
It's up for vote.
Right, Pennsylvania. But having the judge rule the way he did in Pennsylvania gives the other states the other groups that are fighting for, against it in the other states, it gives them some precedent. They can point to that case and point to that judge and say, look, you know, this is what he ruled, and it's the same thing. So it's a win-win. Is the battle over? No, because, as always, Florida is shiesty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Florida is always a problem, but
Tennessee.
I think if this law starts actually really grabbing hold across the country, and this is a law that is as needed as I saw, I think it was Bill Clinton that said it's a law that's as needed as having a law to keep aliens from abducting children.
Dang it.
If that law starts to take hold, then I want to start. I want my law that I've been trying to get put in place for the last 20 years to be given serious consideration. I think there should be a law that once a woman passes the age of 45, she is no longer allowed to buy clothes from Bebe or Forever 21, wear them in public. I don't care what you look like, what your friends tell you you look like, what your family tells you you look like. Once you hit 45, you can no longer wear clothes from Forever 21 and Bebe. You can't.
Well, that's a good thing. It's a good thing I'm only 25.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but they should have clothing stores for women who want to look young that don't say Forever 21, because at 60, you don't need to be wearing things from Forever 21.
Well, okay.
No, that should be a law.
I don't know, because, you know, recently I was at an event and there was a woman with a sheer blouse on. And I think after a certain age, wearing sheer clothes is a no-no for women.
Exactly.
But at the same token, Mr., the same night I had on a shirt from Forever 21.
Okay.
But
you're not
45. I am 45.
You're not 45.
I just turned 45.
Okay, but so you bought the shirt before you turned 45. You're good.
No, I bought the shirt 3 weeks ago. But if you go to my Facebook page and you'll see it, there's nothing strange about the shirt. But I understand what you're saying.
Facebook right now, because I want to see you in this shirt.
You'll see it. Just go to the new pictures that I uploaded.
Now,
do you own biker shorts, Yale?
Excuse me?
Do you own biker shorts?
No, I don't own any biker shorts.
Okay.
If you're going to say something sexist like that, then I'm going to say a man after 40 shouldn't be wearing braids when he has a bald spot in the middle of his head.
Well, I'm with you on that. I'm not going to fight common sense clothing.
Okay, so you see that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm just saying, from my perspective, from what I've seen women who are my mother's age with the midriff shirts cut out.
Oh, okay.
Okay, with the stretch marks
that's not the only thing you buy at Forever 21.
I know, but I'm saying with the meatloaf cummerbund showing. And then the low riser short jeans, and it's just wrong.
You know what? I don't think anybody should wear low riser jeans
unless you're 12.
Seeing some woman squat down with low riser jeans and her thong showing, that's so tacky to me.
But see,
yeah.
Some women think it's sexy, and I have to blame men like Yale who like to look at the thong over the top of the pants. That's a turn on. For some people.
Wait a minute. I am not denying that is me. But what I want to know is how did I get thrown into that? I mean, yeah. I like women to wear thongs if they're appropriately at the right time. You don't wear a thong to church with some low-riser jeans on. I think that's wrong. But after church, or before football, back here.
And while we're on the subject, I want the men of America to pull aside these young brothers who aren't always young and tell them to take their pants. I mean, it's ridiculous. I think that, you know, they don't even understand the origin. I grew up knowing that the pants sag because the men had been in prison,
right,
and there weren't belts allowed in prison. You know, that's not anything you need to glorify. My husband says we need to start telling them that, you know, if you wear your pants sagging, that's telling gay men that you want to have sex with them around the corner. And that'll make them start pulling their pants up.
Well, if you talk to any ex-con or any ex-felon who did some serious time in prison, that's when they got locked up overnight for drunk driving or speeding. But anyone who spent time in prison will tell you that when you see someone walk around with their pants down, that means that they are, like your husband said, they're making themselves available. So I don't know why it has become the clothing fashion for young men on the streets, but really, the connotation there says, hey.
Again, I think it's all in what is allowed, too, because, you know, whenever I see, like, my nephew or my great-nephews, I'm like, pull your pants up. It's really, it's disgusting. There's no reason that I need to see this all the time.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said this before, the police love to see young men who were causing trouble wearing the pants that are sagging. Because you cannot run and pull your pants up at the same time.
No, you can't.
So it's an easy catch.
Well, I make a vow. The next person I see walk past me sagging, I'm going to pull them aside and go, hey, yo, you know what the new thing is? When your pants are sagging, you're letting them know that you're available for gay sex. I hate to be the one to tell you this, but you know, I got your back. I'm just looking out for you, bruh.
But you know what happens? Some they'll say, I wish they would. You know, it's like, well, you are basically telling them that I am available by
right.
doing that. And I don't think they understand it.
And if they say, hey, then what you
If they say, hey, I'll be like, oh, okay. I ain't mad at you. Go for
so
what
please,
you know. Just keep it out of eyeshot of my kids.
So please, you tell them that, Kamal. Don't have your husband tell them that, because if he gets the hey, then.
Right. I'll take one for the team on that one.
Yeah.
That would be hilarious.
So voter suppression in Pennsylvania.
And voter fraud in Florida. They hired the contractors they hired have been committing voter fraud for years, and they
just
knew that.
The name.
Yeah, which is why they told them to change their name. And then they didn't believe that there was going to be voter fraud. I mean, come on. So they've, quote unquote, fired the consultants and stopped their voter registration drive in several key states. Because, you know, it's one thing to, you know, show up as a fictional person and try and vote. But it's another thing. I mean, some of the things they were doing, if a person, they were trying to register voters, if the person said they were a Democrat, they would tell them they have to fill it out again. Or they would take the voter registration and just rip it up and throw it in the trash.
Well, did you see about the young lady that was working in Colorado? She worked in a county clerk's office, and she was only registering Republican.
Her dumb ass. Right.
But you
know
what it's sad? It's sad that people don't know their rights. That's the really sad part, because if I'm going to vote and somebody tell me I can't vote, I'm going to tell them to get the F out of my face and keep it moving.
Right,
exactly.
It's going to be some repercussions and circumstances.
Exactly. But people don't know their rights, so they get intimidated, and they're like, well, so-and-so said, like, I'm going to give you a perfect example. I'm going to be an election judge. I was in training yesterday. This old white woman was asking about, because I'm a provisional ballot judge, and she was like, well, how do we know that these ballots are going to be counted? Because I heard from this radio program I listened to, Nate Rush Limbaugh, she had to say it, that they sent all the votes that they sent all the votes over to Spain. I said, that's absolutely ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous. So then she said, and then I heard that George Soros owned all of the voting machines and that none of the votes were going to count. And I said, that's a lie. I said, that's an out lie. How could you even believe this? And I'm so pissed. And I just yelled it out, and everybody in the class kind of like stopped. The instructors turned red. I said, how do you believe this? I said, this is the issue that we have. She said, well, I heard it more than once. I said, so the lie being repeated is true. So now that since they said it first, you thought it was a lie, but since they repeated it, you believed the lie. So now it's true. I said, that's the most absolutely asinine thing I've ever heard. And then I said, I hope she's not my boss.
The good thing is I haven't gotten that in email. If I'm not getting it, you know, 50 copies of it in email, then it's not as widespread as we would like to think. I mean, for 2008 election, every day I got emails about how it's illegal for you to wear your campaign bling when you go to vote. You know, they won't allow you to vote if you got your bling on.
That was 2008. They started that.
Yeah. That's not even true. What's illegal is for you to actively campaign in front of a voting spot. You can
that's not illegal. In the state of Maryland, that's not illegal. You can, what they call it is electioneering. They can do it no more than 100 feet, but they have to be 100 feet away from the polls, and they can't obstruct people from going to vote.
Right.
Yeah, but it's certainly not against the law for you to wear as many buttons and tassels.
Because I was vomiting out when I went to vote.
Right,
yeah.
And see, but that's what they were doing. They knew that the Obama supporters were so proud that we were going to show up with our hats and our T-shirts and our buttons. And so they were trying to scare, arguably, the black populace into thinking that, you know, if they wore a button, they weren't going to be allowed to vote. And some people went as far as to tell them that they would be arrested. Now, thankfully, I haven't seen that pop up again yet.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe people are getting a little more educated, but I am fully prepared for there to be all kinds of shenanigans similar to
just
what
wait.
You just
usually
about.
Stuff like that comes up the week of the election,
right?
The general election, so people don't have a chance to or won't think to fact check it or to verify it. It's that last minute shenanigan that comes up.
And Rush Limbaugh is going to be the one on his radio show fanning the fires.
Yeah, well, we know Rush is full of a lot of stuff, and not just drugs, but a lot of it is bull crap. But people buy
it. He has a base of people who believe everything he says. I mean, this woman was literally taking what he said as gospel, and she was an older white lady. She had to be maybe in her 70s, and she believed it.
They don't get it. I mean, the biggest thing they don't get, you know, when they say, well, he's turning this into a socialist country. I'm sorry. Do you get Medicare? Do you know somebody who gets VA benefits? I mean, the populace just takes what, Fox?
Well, see, they don't look at that. They look at their VA benefits not as something that they're asking out of the need. They're asking because they earned it. They deserve it. See, it's an entitlement that they don't look at as an entitlement, but yet they want entitlement programs to go away.
Right. And they don't even understand what an entitlement program is.
No, they don't.
You know, they don't understand the 9 or 10 times they've paid into the system, so they're entitled to get their benefits because
exactly.
They paid for.
But you can't have conversations with people like it's like literally, I wanted to knock that woman right straight flat on her ass just from the sheer stupidity. And I'm like, and it's people like you that's causing issues.
Mm-hmm.
But see, the reason why this voter suppression thing is going to change is because now it's not just targeted at blacks. It's targeted at white kids who are in schools out of state from their original home state.
And it's targeting poor people.
And it's targeting poor people and
no
white
color.
People and old people.
Yeah, I mean, I think more light needs to be shown on this particular issue. People don't have a concept that in some places it is so rural and the budget is so bad that they've had to cut, you know, close down an office, and the closest office somebody can go to register to vote or to get their birth certificate is a 200-mile round trip, you know, and this may be a single mother of 5 kids who doesn't have transportation. What's she supposed to do, take 17 buses and a train?
Right. Well, and then the other thing with the gentleman had an issue and the judge had an issue was the fact that the Department of Motor Vehicles were becoming so overwhelmed that the state started to complain that they don't have the manpower for the demand of all of these people standing in lines. The vital records was being overwhelmed because people was trying to get their birth certificates, and then they got to answer all these questions. So the Republicans weren't prepared for people trying to get the proper identification and the backlash that created.
Well, you know what? I truly believe that they knew what the backlash was going to be, and they were hoping that people would just say, you know what, forget it. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to – I'm supposed to be doing this on my lunch break. I can't stand in this line for 7 hours.
The sad thing about that is, you know, we take it for granted that we have this opportunity and this right to vote, so that if it becomes inconvenient, no one wants to do it.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, your job is important. Your job is super important. But tell that to your forefathers and forebearers who were hosed, beaten, lynched, threatened, killed, burned out for trying to catch four buses or walk 7 miles or do whatever so they could vote. And then it doesn't become so much of a burden if you take that seriously. I've had jobs where on election day, I've said, I'm out early so I can vote. And if anybody has said anything to me, and it's only happened once where I had one employer, one manager try to tell me something about not being not having the right to leave work early so I could vote, you know, I'll tell them straight up, it's my constitutional right to be able to vote. Now, at the time,
right.
I was in D.C. and living in a city, which I know that means nothing to you, Kamal, but that's quite a commute.
And I mean, sometimes it's not realistic. I mean, if I'm a single mother and I'm paid hourly and I get a 30-minute break for lunch, you know, how is that going to help me? I believe, and I've said this 1,000 times, I think voting should be a 24-hour period. I think voting should start at 12 a.m. on November, whatever, the second Tuesday of November, and end at 12 a.m., you know, the following day. I think it should be a 24-hour voting period at least, because at that, it's hard not to find time to vote in a 24-hour period. You know, you can go to work and work your full 8 hours because you still can vote, or you vote before you go to work.
Well, I think it depends on the, I don't know, it depends on the people. You know, if you know that voting is important to you, you got to do what you need to do.
Exactly right.
They're used to, unlike people like Yale, who's like, I'm going to tell you right now that I'm going to vote and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. Other people aren't that. Seriously, you have other people's like, you know, I hate to say the slave mentality, but I've worked with people where they still believe that if your job tells you something, you got to do it. I don't have to do shit. Excuse my French.
It's called institutionalized mentality.
That's exactly what it is. I've seen people lose jobs because of that mentality. Doing the right thing, they're going to get rid of you anyway, but they didn't see it coming.
Right. But then there's also common sense involved. If you are you're in a job where you're having some problems on a job, you know, it's not your position at that point to just do like I do or have done and stand up and say, I'm going to go vote and nothing you can do about it. You can say to your manager, your employer, look, I know I'm not in the best standing right now, but I need to vote today. It's election day. I'm going to vote. So I'll either be coming in late or I'll be going home early because I'm going to vote because I think it's that important. And then if you have a problem, then that's what HR departments are for. Not that they'll always be on your side, but, I mean, you have to broach it with the same sort of professionalism that you expect in return.
Right.
Yeah, but I
is,
still think that there's a segment of the population that are in situations where that's just not possible. You know, I know, like, when I was working at the movie theater, I was a kid, so it didn't really matter. But if I had said, I'm going to vote, see ya, they would have been like, oh, okay, fine. They wouldn't outright have fired me, but I could see them reducing my hours or playing hardball or threatening somebody. And if somebody is in a situation, and I understand what you're saying, Sassy, that they don't know their rights, you know, there comes a point where is it worth it to fight? You know, you've got 4 kids to feed. Is this fight worth it?
Right.
On a personal level. You know, yes, I think everybody should vote, of course, but I can see somebody who feels like they are backed in a corner where they just can't. They can't take another hour off. They took time off because one of their kids was sick. And I think if you just had 24-hour voting, this would help some people who are disenfranchised because of their own financial circumstances get the ability to vote.
Yeah, but they can't stop them. They literally cannot stop you from going to vote. They can't.
Yeah,
they can't stop you from going to vote. And they can try, but they can certainly couch it in a different reason.
Right, they can put it another way. So,
you know, their job can be threatened in a different way.
So,
and maybe just the fear of that happening. You know, maybe nobody's explicitly said it, but just the fear of, you know, or living paycheck to paycheck where they can't take an hour off. They need that, you know, $10.20 or $7.25 that they're going to lose from having to go vote. And since Republicans have made it very, very difficult in some states by shorting machines and then having, and you know, all this voter suppression, you know, that 1 hour could turn into three easily.
Right.
Then what do they do?
Well, look, let's move on to the next subject, which I really am anxious to hear you all's opinions on. The fake bacon shortage scare of 2012.
You know what? That was the pork cartel.
The pork cartel is the one that came out and said it was false.
Well, I really didn't give a damn about the bacon.
They're just trying to save face. But you know, they started this mess so idiots like me would go out and buy three or four packets of bacon before the shortage, because I'm not paying $10 for a pound of bacon, only to find out that the joke was on me. I still say that was the pork cartel.
The pork cartel came out. Actually, it was the British. The British are the ones that tried to get back for the Revolutionary War.
Or it was the beef farmers that was trying to get back for the whole mad cow scare.
Yeah, and again, that took place in England, right? In Britain,
mad cow here. Remember, Oprah got sued. There was mad cow here.
There was mad cow here, but it really, really, really started over in Britain because they had cattle that were like losing their mind.
Yeah, Oprah got sued because she said she wasn't eating any more beef.
Just eating more hamburgers. She said no more hamburgers. The beef.
Which was so ridiculous on so many levels.
Station here and lost. I have a caller from area code 617. I'm gonna see who this is and what they have to say. Hello, caller from area code 617.
Hey, it's Ed.
Edward, my
name. How's it going?
Hi, Ed.
Hey, come on, how's it going there?
Back me up. It was the pork cartel, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Well, maybe it was those Chick-fil-A guys, those little cows that are always, you know, saying eat more chicken or eat more beef or something. I don't know. Maybe they've had to move on.
and to Yale's earlier question, I wouldn't give a damn if it was chicken. You can have my chicken. Don't take my bacon. Plus,
wait a minute. Ed has a legitimate, I don't understand it, he has a chicken allergy. He can't eat chicken. But you're a black woman, and you're not going to stand here and tell me you don't care if there's no chicken.
Oh, well, I know a black guy who does not eat chicken.
He ain't black.
If I had to choose between chicken and bacon...
The rest of my family would revolt if there was no chicken in the house.
Yeah.
If I had to choose between chicken and bacon, bacon wins every single time. Plus, I already told you, there's chicken in the can. There's never not going to be no chicken.
There's chicken in the sea. That's everything, man.
Right, chicken in the sea.
Well, Ed, now that we got you online, I'm glad you came in. I want to continue on the bacon thread, but... What do you think about what's going on in Boston and Massachusetts between Brown and what's your name?
Warren.
Ed, please tell me how the whole she's not a Native American thing is playing out locally, because that's so ridiculous.
Yeah, look, there's two things about Massachusetts. And see, I've got the advantage of living in a state that's always been Democratic for so, so long it's two things. No one really thinks about politics that much here, believe it or not. I mean, we're not a swing state, so only every third commercial is actually a political commercial on TV. So that's good. And not interrupting my, you know, Monday Night Football with a whole lot of commercials. But, yeah, look, you know, I think the thing is that, yeah, look, I don't know. I would say that it's, it pops into the paper every once in a while. But, you know, it's not like most people actually probably never even knew it, you know, was it even something, because she certainly doesn't look like a Native American. But yeah, look, I don't know. I don't think people really paying that much attention to it. The two candidates talk more about it than anybody else talks about it. So locally,
nobody feels that he's crossing the line by continuing to pound on that.
Well, look, not really, because for one, there's not that many Native Americans in the whole state, really. So it's not like there's anybody. Certainly, the Native Americans aren't jumping up around down about it, because it's Massachusetts. I mean, I don't know. It's like there's really aren't any. I mean, most of the Native American tribes in New England are either in Connecticut or in Connecticut primarily. So Massachusetts has virtually none.
Yeah, right, so they have all the casinos, right? They have the casinos locked down in Connecticut.
Yeah, they're all in Connecticut. So nobody, you know, there's no casinos or tribal areas really in Massachusetts to speak of. So there's nobody jumping up and saying, oh, we're so offended. So it's essentially just the two candidates talking about it, and I think everyone else kind of just looks at it and says, oh, well, okay.
My other question is, what is the feel on this last debate where he kept trying to insist that he's an independent?
Yeah, look, I mean, here's the thing that's interesting about Massachusetts, and again, Massachusetts is primarily Democratic, but what I would say is it's always been, you know, a Kennedy Democratic state, and what I mean by that is there's not very many poor people in Massachusetts. So the classic, sort of Democratic side that's looking out for the more disenfranchised, the disenfranchised largely don't exist in Massachusetts. I mean, we only have 6% unemployment here, you know, and we don't have the classic, you know, sort of, you know, disenfranchised group of people here because, well, it's a small state. It's got, you know, 400,000 college students that go to, you know, Harvard's and MIT's and Wellesley's and Babson's, and, you know, so most people who are Democrats in Massachusetts are Democrats because they're kind of guilty about being kind of rich. And so, I mean, look, I'm the poorest guy in the richest neighborhood, you know, here where I live. And you know, most Democrats here and where I live, I live in a house that's $1.5 million, you know, and so they're Democrats because they kind of feel guilty, because that's kind of how the whole, you know, sort of the Kennedy Democrat aura evolved here. So everyone in Massachusetts just thinks they're doing people a favor by it. So it's a funny state, I think, as far as that. You know, having grown up, you know, me down more down the south in Massachusetts, I know what, or in Maryland, I know what it's like to be a regular Democrat. You know, like, you know, somebody who is actually looking out for disenfranchised, because you may at one time have been disenfranchised, or you actually were middle class at some time. But there's nobody up here in Massachusetts like that, because, you know, most of the – which is why the whole Brown-Warren thing is so funny, because, I mean, Brown essentially, you know, got Ted Kennedy's seat when he passed, so – which was just one of those kind of things where everyone said, well, everyone in Massachusetts already knew they were going to vote for Obama, but because most of the other underlying people, even the Democrats here, have kind of wild, they said, well, I'm going to put this Brown guy in because I just want to make sure someone's keeping an eye on the money.
Yeah.
And that's essentially how you would define the particular election.
You wouldn't say it was because, and I forget her name, but the woman that was running against Brown ran such a horrible campaign that she wasn't worthy of the office.
I think nobody knew who Scott Brown was before I had no idea who Scott Brown even was before that election was called. I mean, it was a quick election. I don't think he did any more. You know, I don't think he did any better job of running, you know, the thing, because it was a short election. I mean, it was only, what, 10 weeks?
Kennedy's caught everybody by surprise for some reason.
Yeah. Well, but I'll tell you why it was. I do honestly think that, you know, the underlying, you know, sentiment here in Massachusetts is, yeah, we're Democrats here in Massachusetts, but we're also rich people. So
right.
So they'll say, yeah, look, I'm voting for Obama because I'm a hardcore Democrat, but boy, I'm going to put this Scott Brown guy in because I'm not really sure I want to let all the money go out. You know, like they're just sort of looking around. And so I think to a certain extent he was sort of, you know, well, let's just stick somebody in there just in case, just in case all these great ideas are a little bit out of whack. But look, having said that, I would think that, you know, Scott Brown is probably a guy who, for the most part, he's been in a state where he's held elective office primarily, you know, not as a Democrat. So as a Republican, he's probably about the best kind of Republican you can probably get, at least as being closely enough aligned with a disenfranchised as is humanly possible for a Republican to be, just because of the nature of the political environment he's grown up in. And look, and most of the people still, you know, even Republicans in Massachusetts are kind of, you know, they're liberal leaning. You know, there's not a lot of, you know, real left Republicans in Massachusetts.
What about his quote unquote gaffe last night about picking Scalia? Of all the justices to pick, he picked Scalia.
Yeah, well, it's probably the first name. Well, look, I would say, again, what I would probably also would say too is there's an awful lot of the largest religion in the state of Massachusetts is Catholic, Democratic and Republican side. I don't think that's as much of a gaffe as people think. Plenty of Democrats, you know, go to Catholic Church here, and I think there's still, you know, there's a big, you know, sentiment, you know, towards that. I mean, you know, or, you know, so it may have been a gaffe, but I don't think it's as much a gaffe as people think it is, because there's a huge, you know, Catholic population in the state of Massachusetts, more so than probably any other state. As a matter of fact, I would be willing to bet that the largest population, percentage of Catholics reside in Massachusetts than any other state in the entire United States. So, well-placed gaffe, I would say.
So
you know,
then, I guess
easily recovered from.
So I guess my question becomes then, compared, you know, nationally, we think that Warren has pulled ahead and Scott Brown is flailing. Are you getting a different read of that locally? Is the gap not as big as we are seeing or we're being told, and is he more competitive than we're being told?
I think it'll be very competitive. I think that you know for the most part, you know, for the couple of years that Scott Brown has held that position, since that special election, you know, more or less in the press. I mean, the press never really, you know, hounded him on anything, really. I mean, you know, for the most part, you know, he was always, you know, viewed as a pretty, you know, good sort of person, you know, like a normal sort of guy, and you know, he drives around in a truck, and that's what he does. I mean, you know, he's sort of like a, you know, just sort of a normal Massachusetts kind of guy. So, you know, there was never any, you know, real derision, you know, in the newspapers, you know, for Scott Brown. And it's really only, and look, I think it was very difficult for the Democratic Party to find someone to run against him. You know, they really went through an awful lot of people, and you know, Elizabeth Warren was, you know, it was difficult to find somebody. And even Elizabeth Warren, you know, she's sort of an elitist Democrat. You know, she's not a, you know, having come up through the ranks, you know, again, not having, you know, she's not like a, you know, a Deval Patrick, you know, who's been out there in the trenches, you know, fighting for the disenfranchised. I mean, you know, Elizabeth Warren lives out in the suburbs. Who's disenfranchised in the suburbs? And they'll be disenfranchised in the suburbs. You know, I mean.
So, so what's your thought on it? Is it going to be Brown or Warren?
Look, you know, I don't know. I'd say it's 50-50. But look, it wouldn't surprise me if you saw, you know, that there would be still a lot of non-committal, you know, independents out there who are sort of saying, well, yeah, I'm going to vote for Obama again, but I'm probably going to cast a vote for Brown just because I don't think in Massachusetts, because, you know, it's a pretty, you know, well-off state with comparatively low unemployment. Like I said, 6% unemployment here is not, you know, it's more than normal versus the 8 or 9 in lots of other places. I still think there's a lot of people who, you know, those independents would say, yeah, yeah, I'm going to go with Obama because I'm going to keep on that path. But they would stick. They would vote for Brown as a senator, you know, in the you know Congress there, just to, you know, that's their safety valve. Okay, if it gets too out of control, I want someone in there who's going to, you know, not let everything go far left. You know, I think it's going to be close, and it wouldn't surprise me if he's stuck back in there again. Because look, this is the same people put him in.
Right, and I think one of the things that we miss here in D.C. area, Baltimore, Washington, D.C. area, is, as Ed is saying, the line between Democrat and Republican is more blurry in other states, especially in Massachusetts, from what I understand. It's not that hardcore, you're a Democrat, I'm a Republican, we don't get along on any issues. I think it plays out well, and the reason that the National Republican Party got more involved in it than normally is because, one, it was an opportunity for them to gain another Senate seat that they normally would have never gotten.
Yeah.
It gives them an opportunity to not only have that Senate seat, but to combat the Obama surge, for lack of a better term, but also allows them to try to frame the argument that the Democratic Party is losing ground across the country. So even though in Massachusetts, being a Democrat, being a Republican is no big deal, and, you know, Kennedy was so easily reelectable that I think, what did he get when Romney ran against him? Romney got like 21% when he ran against him. Years ago. It's not that disparity. Like down here in Maryland, for the first time in since Spiro Agnew, we had a Republican governor when Ehrlich was elected over Kathleen Kennedy, believe it or not. It was a big deal. It was a huge deal that Maryland went from having Democratic governors to having a Republican governor, but the line was drawn so staunchly that a lot of what Ehrlich tried to do was foo-fooed, and he lost a lot of power. And he was a one-term governor. And when he tried to run for re-election after he lost to the current governor, when he tried to run for re-election, no one wanted him back in. So.
Yeah.
It's not so much of a distinct line here as it would be here.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing with a state like Massachusetts, and there are other states that are like this, is that, you know, for the most part, it's a pretty even state as far as, you know, there's not this really wide division between the rich and the poor. I mean, I would almost, again, in general, when I, having lived in lots of places, not only around the world but in the U.S., there's not the classic poor people in Massachusetts. I mean, you can walk down the street in Boston, and there's a few homeless people, not many. You know, we've done a good job of you know, adding state level safety nets. And the fact is, look, the economy's not bad here. I mean, it's, you know, it's 6% unemployment, and, you know, it's not we only have one big city. It's not like we have a huge infrastructure to support. You know, the whole western Massachusetts just has two highways running through it. You know, we're not overburdened with a lot of stuff here. So you don't have this classic derision of, you know, if you're, you know, that you're, the two parties are warring against each other because it is predominantly Democratic. And, you know, so, you know, it's a good thing, but it's not a relevant Democratic state because it's not really, you know, representative of the majority of you know, what the Democratic platform stands for. You know, there's not disenfranchised people in Massachusetts. We don't have, you know, poverty, you know, that's relegated to one or two classes of people, because there's very little classic poverty here. And so it's a tough state to use as an example, you know, really for anything. And I think, you know, even you and I have sort of talked on, you know, on email a couple of times. It's the reason why it's probably the worst state to use as the healthcare example. Yeah, we implemented healthcare you know, across the board here, but it was easy for us because we're a rich state. You know, it didn't matter. You know, nothing out of anybody's pocket to implement that kind of thing. So,
which is an interesting point, Ed, which I don't understand why Romney doesn't frame his argument for why Massachusetts health care would be so much different than.
You know, I'll tell you why it is. The one of the things with the Massachusetts healthcare is that it's worked in Massachusetts because you know we've not been affected by unemployment. We don't have a real huge disparity in income, across lots of people. You know, there's lots of jobs. There's lots of very stable employment relative to other parts of the country. So, you know, but the dirty little secret is, you know, universal health care has cost the state 40% of its total budget, and nobody wants to say that. You know, the Democrats don't want to say that because can you imagine it's worked great in Massachusetts, but it costs us 40% of the budget. And boy, I tell you what, most states couldn't possibly live under that. So, so it's tricky. It's a challenging situation. And Romney, of course, he's got that challenge of there's too many times where he said it was a good idea. You know, he can't really go full force with that was the worst thing I ever did. I mean, it's loosely talked about, but not to the extent that it is. And of course. The Democrats have not come into here and saying, hey, look how great it is, because even within the state of Massachusetts, we're all sort of thinking, wow, 40% of the state budget is health care for, the people at the poverty level and state workers. I mean, it's killing the state.
Right. I mean, 40% is a huge chunk, but the plans such that they are that I've heard from the administration is – the states wouldn't have to pay 40%.
Oh yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I think what the thing is that everyone's sort of looking around and saying, okay, well, that money still doesn't have to be paid, and they're looking at it, say, wow, are you going to transfer all? Like, this is why when people start saying, you know, why no one keeps saying, oh, it's going to lower costs. Well, I don't know. In the 6 years that it's been enacted here in Massachusetts, the costs have actually risen, you know, quite dramatically, and I think that even if it goes all straight to the federal government, one of the disadvantages of the federal plan for us here in Massachusetts is we're actually going to have to take about 450,000 people out of the state plan because the state plan won't be in existence any longer, and nobody's sure what's going to happen to those people. Where are they going to go? You know, and of course we all know where they're going to go. They're going to go to the federal plan, and that big part of that budget is going to go over there. And government never does anything for cheaper.
Not always, right?
And I think that's again. That's why I think even though we've successfully implemented the universal health care here. Which is great. You know, we've covered people who are just at the poverty level and below and so forth, and that's been a great thing. But it hasn't been without some pretty big costs. And even in the 6 years of time, we're still trying to figure out how do you control the costs. And we're implementing a lot of things here, but boy, I tell you. You even as difficult as it is on the state level to implement those cost changes, when you roll that out to the 50 states and bring all that cost control up to the federal level, I think that's what scares people. I think they look at it and say, "Wow," which is why no one's talking about Massachusetts as being the example. The press likes to talk about it, but the two parties won't talk about it.
Right, and then of course, you said Romney can't say anything about it because if he does, then it catches. And his big yo-yo etch-a-sketch moment, and he'll be back to saying things like,
I'm not familiar precisely with exactly what I said, but I stand by what I said, whatever
right.
it was. And, and with regards to, I'll go back and take a look at what was said there.
Yeah, well, look, it's easier for Romney just to not mention it, and because he knows that the Democrats won't mention Massachusetts unless it's brought up by a journalist, essentially. And both parties just sort of say, oh, yeah, we did it in Massachusetts, blah, 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 at the end of the conversation. because it's not – what we've done in Massachusetts is probably not really replicable across the rest of the country purely because the economics only work for the several – and, I mean, it's like five or six states in the entire country that have the, sort of size population and, you know, general economic capability that Massachusetts has,
So my question is: did universal health care solve the problem it was trying to solve, or did it create a bigger problem?
Look, I think there's a couple things. You know, if I sort of look at it this way, we were able to implement universal health care, and you know, all poor people are covered. I mean, you know, so that mothers and kids and, you know, all kinds of things. So people who fall below. So we don't have people who are, uncovered, which is a great thing. So that aspect of it, has worked out pretty well. I sort of fall into that, upper middle class sort of category. And my costs have gone up. You know, what used to cost $900 a month now costs $1,200 a month. You know, and the fact of the matter is, you know, that's just the way it is. You know, it has cost the middle class more money, and in a lot of cases, you know, the businesses who, of course, now businesses of 10 people or more have to, provide coverage, and so it's cost businesses a lot more money. So, you know, on the one hand, we've done a great job of covering the poor, but it is expensive. You know, and the middle and the people, you know, like I say, that middle class and upper middle class pile there. You know, anybody, you know, say between $45,000 and $150,000 a year, they're paying a lot of money, paying more money than they were.
So
just because you can't get around that, I just don't think you're ever going to get around that.
Poor people are always
the solution is costing. The solution is costing more than the problem was costing in the first place.
It used to be about, I guess there's two ways to look at it. One is I'm definitely paying more than I used to pay. It used to only cost the state of Massachusetts about 28% of the budget for, healthcare related items that were essentially being covered. Now we're up to 40%. And what I would say is that there was a lot of people that were uncovered and also not using the system, you know, whereas now those people are covered and a payment is being made. So, you know, in theory, you could go for many, many years and never have health insurance. You could be 25 years old to 45 years old, be in perfectly good health and never have had any never had to go anywhere, never had to drop into the emergency room because you got a cold, and all those classic things that cost the system a lot of money. Now, of course, what happens is everyone has to be covered. When you file your tax return, if you're not covered, you know, you essentially you've been part of a pool that's been paid into, and the government fines you $900, you know, on your tax return. Of course, if you don't pay taxes and or you have a small no refund of your owe, then they can't really ever get it for you. So it's cost more. And look, I think that's just the way it is. I think the fact of the matter is if we believe as a society that total health care ought to be there, it's not going to be cheaper than it is now. It's going to cost more because more people are getting more services. You know, that's just the way it is. And so I think it's a false argument on both sides when they start saying they're going to save money. No one's going to save money with universal health care. What we are saying as a society is, hey, look, it's worth $100 more a month per person who can afford to pay to make sure everyone's covered. That's the only argument that can be made, because it's not going to be cheaper.
That's true. I mean, but it, just from a common sense standpoint, it's going to cost to cover everybody who was not covered before.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Supposedly down the line when I go to the emergency room, because I've broken my leg running down the street and whatever, and I go to the emergency room and get a cast put on my leg, it's now going to cost my insurance company exponentially less than what it would have cost before everyone else is covered, because part of my cause for my cast when everyone is not covered is to cover for those people, is for the coverage for those people who don't have health care.
Yeah. So, right, and the hope is, and the hope really is, because this is what we've done in Massachusetts, the hope really is that, see, as an example, at $900 a month, health insurance may be too expensive for a bunch of people. You get, and so there'd be people who are uninsured, and they just, and that's just the way it is. They take this risk that they, nothing happens to them.
Uh-huh.
At $500 a month, that person might say, yeah, okay, I'll pay. I can pay that. So they'll pay, and but of course they'll go for 10 years and nothing bad will happen to them. So what everyone's really hoping, and of course no one, you know, only the economists really know this, is that what they're really hoping is that enough people will come into the paying side but will still not use the services. And that's
right.
That's essentially what they're hoping. And that, you know, but again, you can't go out and have that discussion with the general public, because the general public is not economists and they're not going to understand that whole conversation.
The general public is stupid.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The general public, you know, the general public can't have economic arguments because there's no, they just don't understand. I mean, they're like, what? You know. I mean, you know. But that's essentially what everyone's hoping, is they're hoping that they'll bring the insurance costs down to bring more people into the pools, so that even if you're, you know, because in the past you might have been someone who paid nothing and didn't have any claims for 10 years, this time you might pay $500 a month but still have no claims for 10 years. And hopefully that amount of money will pay for all the, you know, the people who are using the system. And that's essentially the whole healthcare issue in a nutshell. It's, I got to get more people into the pools paying something so that somehow the average cost is lower and there's less money paid out by, you know, like the government for essentially uninsured people, you know.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
So we can solve the whole debate right now. Hey, look. I don't know why these politicians just don't say that, because that's the matter is.
Because it's a death sentence for their campaign.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, I think if people really knew what was going on, they just wouldn't vote for anybody, probably.
True. And there has to be some argument for, I mean, for the system to work, right? We can't all agree. I mean, we can't all succumb to the ridiculousness of some of the things being propagated on the right, but we can't all. It does not make democracy work if everyone agrees on everything that is being said.
Right. Yeah. And again, I think that the big challenge is it's just such a complex issue, and you can't. You know, how do you explain it to people? You know, but, I mean, there's a huge amount of the population who just isn't going to understand. I mean, you know, they don't understand financial stuff. So it's nothing bad about that. I mean, look, I don't understand how to, you know, grow stuff in a field or, you know, or fix a car. I just happen to be a finance and economist guy originally. So I can have that discussion. But, you know, there's plenty of other things I can't do. But, you know, I'm in the minority of people that would, you know, have that, you know, have been through those kind of things in the past. Like, say, oh, okay, I see what's going on here. They're just hoping to get enough people into the paying pools that somehow that'll make up for the people who are not currently in there.
Right. Well, America.
Yeah, America.
We didn't have time to mention the global warming about Andy Williams.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to mention that. Andy Williams was my boyfriend.
The time of your life.
Moon River.
Well, thank you, Ed. You.
Thanks, Ed and Sassy. We appreciate it as always.
Everyone online who is listening. And, next week, we discuss what happened during the debate. And next week, Kamal will have some big news for.
Come on,
our election night coverage show.
Oh, yes. We will be on the air for 6 hours, y'all. Six.
Be good.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm excited and scared at the same time.
Well, America, thank you again. Kamal, I will be talking to you. Drive safely and stop spitting on people and have them spit on your car, babe.
You know what? And he coughed when he came back out. I think he has the bird flu or he's in the process of becoming a zombie, personally.
Shoot him in the head first.
Twice. All right. Bye.
All right, I'll talk to you. Love you.
Love you.